If we continue to practice, we'll get better at pronouncing the class of pesticides known as neonicotinoids. They act on the nervous system in ways similar to the workings of nicotine, hence the name. They've been very much in the news since one kind of neonicotinoid caused the deaths of thousands of bees from a spraying in a Portland area shopping center last summer. And that event made them the focus of regulation efforts by anti-pesticide activists who had less luck with the Oregon legislature and more with the Eugene City Council. Two guests are here to talk to us about that. Lisa Arkin is the executive director at Beyond Toxics based in Eugene. Lisa, thanks for joining us once again.
Good morning. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Good to have you here. And George Brown is a member of the Eugene City Council and also our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. George, welcome back to the Exchange to you.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
So, Lisa, describe it. There was a fairly concerted effort, it seems like, particularly with the Oregon legislature having annual sessions now to convince them to do something in this session that just ended on Friday. What were you seeking and what did you get?
The original proposal for House Bill 4139 was to make neonicotinoid pesticides a restricted pesticide product. And that's not a ban, but what that would have meant is that all neonicotinoid pesticides would require someone with a pesticide license from the state of Oregon to only people with that license would be able to purchase these products. So they would be restricted in that way for use by commercial applicators and not for homeowners in, just on the shelf where everyone and anyone could pick them up. And that's because the labeling is very weak. There's no good clear instructions to the user of how to avoid harm to pollinators, and most homeowners are not aware that these labels on the backs of the products are actually the law regarding their use.
So they are on store shelves. Anybody could pick them up, take them home, and spray the apple tree or something?
Exactly, and that's what often happens. So they're commonly used in ornamental plants like roses and other blooming flowers where people want to keep sort of a perfect Disneyland look to their plants.
You say that with a certain level of scorn, I think.
Well, maybe not scorn, but I think that while I appreciate beauty and I love parks, there might be a place where we have to compromise and that not everything can be completely perfect in order for us to enjoy it.
Aren't there also tobacco or nicotine-based products out there already? How do the neonicotinoids compare to the pyrethrins, for example?
Well, I'm not a toxicologist, so I'm not sure I can give you a very specific answer, but pyrethrins are made from a plant-based product, and I don't think they contain the same active ingredients as neonicotinoids, so they work at on a different level.
All right, so as you mentioned, though, the Oregon...
Pyrethrins...
Go ahead, George.
Pyrethrins are derived from chrysanthemums.
Right.
They're very short-lived. They kill insects, and then they decay very quickly, and neonicotinoids are persistent and last for many months.
Okay. So George,
one,
why don't
one
you...
key difference.
All right. So why don't you pick up the thread here, George? I mean, the Eugene City Council, did it respond in part to the lack of a particularly bold response from the Oregon legislature?
Well, no. We were planning, I believe it was under a foot to do this anyway. Regardless, it would have been nice had the legislature passed that bill, but sometimes the municipalities have to pick up where the legislature leaves off.
And they did pass a bill, so we want to make sure that your listeners know that the legislature did take action, and actually in a very short session, just the month of February pretty much, for them to take some kind of action on an environmental issue, I think, is really a monumental step in the right direction.
But rather than new regulations, didn't it amount to a task force and further study?
There is now a task force. The makeup of that task force is very balanced. And there is a new requirement, so that is a new restriction, so to speak. Anyone that plans to take the courses to get a pesticide applicator license and apply for that license now must take a dedicated course on bee health and pesticides, and they must show that they can pass the exam that goes along with that course in addition to the other exams they must pass to get a license.
Did the neonicotinoids sort of sneak up on regulators, Lisa Arkin? I mean, it seems like a lot of people hadn't even heard of them, and Lord knows it's still hard to pronounce them, until that massive bee die-off in Wilsonville last summer.
Well, actually, we've been working on this issue for almost 2 years. neonicotinoids were a substitute product for other very hazardous and harmful pesticides, so they were thought to be a solution, but actually they're turning out, as George said, to be extremely persistent in the environment. They can last in soil and water for years, as much as 4 years and maybe more, and also they've been found to accumulate in the hives and in the pollen and the honey of bees. So even if it doesn't kill a bee outright upon contact, the bees are bringing this product back to the hive where it's taking its toll on the entire sort of internal ecosystem of the hive. And there's also plenty of research now showing that it's depressing immune systems in both amphibians and insects. So it has some very serious sublethal effects.
We are talking about neonicotinoid pesticides. Let me get that straight once again with Lisa Arkin from Beyond Toxics in Eugene. George Brown is a Eugene City Council member. The council recently voted to take its own action on the neonicotinoids. You can join our discussion on the exchange about these particular pesticides or pesticides more generally. Our number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. George, I assume that Beyond Toxics had brought some of the information to the city council members and had worked a little bit to get them to get you to pass something.
Yes, they did. They were provided us with all kinds of great information, as did beekeepers, local beekeepers, and educated the city council quite a bit. They gave us lots of info about, colony collapse and the danger of pesticides, specifically neonicotinoids on pollinator health, not just bees, but it affects bees. Aren't the only insect that affect pollinate food plants, butterflies and bumblebees. It's not just honeybees. There's moths do so, and they're all affected adversely by this product. So yes, we did. We got a lot of good information from them.
And was there much arm twisting, or was there something that the city council seemed to be behind when it was first presented?
Well, most, if not all, of the councilors are actually backyard gardeners, and either have ornamental plants and or vegetable gardens. So it did not take a lot of arm twisting on the part of anybody to move this forward.
It was a unanimous vote, and supported by the city manager as well.
And so, I want to come back, though, to one of the major points here, though, Lisa Arkin, which is obviously this all really splashed to our attention with the massive bee kill in Wilsonville. Have there been other, we know about colony collapse disorder, and I guess science is still trying to figure out what's going on there. Apparently a number of different factors could be in play. But are there other less headline-grabbing incidents involving neonicotinoids that you want to share with the public?
Well, I think many Oregonians are aware of the 4 bee die-offs that occurred in the summer of 2013, where in one case, about 55,000 bumblebees were killed in a single morning.
That's the shopping center in Wilsonville?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I had a phone call from someone who went to the Costco nearby that Target and said bumblebees were dying by the droves in that parking lot, too. So they might have been flying away and then dropping out of the sky a couple blocks away. So it probably was a number of bees that died far greater than 55,000. And then there were 3 more incidents, all involving neonicotinoids, all involving sort of landscaping and ornamental applications.
All right, let us take a phone call here. We have Pam and Dexter on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about neonics. I like the abbreviation. Neonicotinoid pesticides with Lisa Arkin and George Brown from the Eugene City Council.
Hi, well, this is an issue near and dear to my heart, as it should be to everybody. But yesterday I went to the Home and Garden Show, and we're having an event at Cosmic Pizza this Saturday to kind of get the word out and educate people on the issue from 1 to 5. And I was going around to the landscapers and the gardeners, garden supply stores, and asking them if they knew who their supplier was for the soils, because a lot of people don't know that there's these neonicotinoids in the soils of the plants that people are buying. So people are trying to help the bees by purchasing pollinator plants, but then they don't know that the neonicotinoids are in the plants themselves. And one of the garden supply vendors had told me that she did some research and found out that one of her soil suppliers had taken railroad ties and ground them up. And that was in the, which is highly toxic. I don't know if it has neonics, but
I think it's got arsenic. If they're still using creosote, that's got arsenic.
Because they weren't thinking about all the details of where their soil is coming from. So I just think, you know, as the gardening season kicks in and spring is right around the corner, that the more we educate each other and our neighbors, it's really important, because the beekeepers I know, their bees are gone. That cold spell was really rough on them. A lot of them died from that. They aren't returning to the hive. So, you know, I just think this is a really crucial and important issue, that right now is the time to educate people. So if you guys could talk a little bit about, you know, the plants you buy. I know if you buy organic, that's pretty much ensured that they don't have the neonics in it. And thanks again for all your work, Lisa.
All right,
George, too.
Thanks for the call,
Bye.
Pam. Appreciate it.
Yep.
So, Lisa, you want to start there?
Pam brings up a really important topic. I'm so glad she did this. We already talked about how these neonicotinoids, or neonics, are persistent in the environment. George mentioned that. They're also what's called a systemic pesticide. So some things you spray on a plant and it just stays on the surface. But that's not the case with neonics. They're actually absorbed and taken up by the plant. They get transported to all the plant tissues, including the flowers, and then hence the pollen from the flowers. They can be applied as what's called a soil drench, which is what Pam, the caller, was referring to, where in order to keep plants looking all spiffy and pretty out there on the shelves, like in front of a parking, in the parking lot in front of a store, as we see like with Bi-Mart or Fred Meyer's, they drench the soil with these neonics so that they're then taken up into the plant and keep the bugs away while the plant's up for sale. But the problem is, since they're so persistent, you bring that plant home, you put it in your garden, and then you're adding, unintended, of course, neonics to the soil that you think is organic. You're hoping to keep your garden lovely for bees and attractive for bees, but actually you're bringing poison into your garden. Hmm. And these plants are not labeled as receiving these soil drenches, so every consumer ends up being their own EPA. They have to sort of police this on their own and ask the supplier. And that makes it very difficult to have an organic garden.
George Brown, we have talked in general terms about the action by the Eugene City Council, of which you are a member. What specifically did the council decide, and how soon does it take effect?
I believe that it, I can't remember if it took immediate effect or not. Usually when we pass a resolution or an ordinance, it's 30 days, unless there's
an emergency.
Right, and it takes effect immediately. I think that one is in effect now. I think the date of the, Lisa, what was the date? It was in February.
February 26th.
Got it right here, 26th of February. Okay, so it's not quite in effect, because I don't think it took effect immediately.
It'd be March 28th, I guess, if you got to 30 days, yeah.
Right, uh-huh. Yeah, but the city's not using them right now, so.
That's a great success story that I think people would enjoy hearing. The city staff that manage our parks and our open spaces and our common public spaces, when they started to understand the problem that neonics caused, they decided to eliminate them. And they turned to the supplier of the flower baskets that hang downtown in the spring and the summer and make the downtown really beautiful. They had been previously spraying these flower baskets and flower beds with neonics. But when they discovered how bad these products were, they went to their supplier of the flowers and worked with them to have hardier types of flowers in the baskets and better soils that would have encourage flower strength, so to speak, and now they haven't used those neonics for two summers in a row, I think it is, George?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a great success story where simply by paying attention to the kinds of flowers they were planting and the kinds of care and watering and feeding they were giving the flowers, they were able to create just as beautiful a downtown atmosphere without the use of any pesticides.
So this bans the neonicotinoid use on city property. I understand, George, it also expands the pesticide-free parks program. Can you explain what that is?
Well, that's more aspirational. I don't believe that we added any city parks to the list that are currently pesticide-free.
Yeah, there are 10 parks in the city. George is right. It's a goal to bring more parks into the city, into the city's pesticide-free parks program. And then, George, isn't there a report back that the parks and open space staff will come back to the city council and report how they're coming along with bringing more parks online to be pesticide-free?
Yes, within 18 months. The language is a little vague. Within 18 months, hopefully it'll be quicker than that.
Okay, Lisa Arkin, just about a half a minute left here, and I'm sure people are wondering, okay, so what do we use? I want to get rid of some of these bugs. So, I mean, what's the approach you recommend?
Well, I think what we saw with the city staff looking at hardier kinds of plants and more care is a key, that we're just going to have to, you know, bend our knees a little more and get down into our gardens and manage that soil and manage those bugs. I know there are soaps that you can spray on ornamental plants and vegetables that take care of aphids and other kind of munchy little animals without the toxics.
All right. Lisa Arkin is the executive director at Beyond Toxics, based in Eugene. George Brown is a member of the Eugene City Council, which just passed its own ordinance banning neonicotinoid use on city property. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
You bet.
Thank you, Jeff.
That will do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Hour two, we'll talk about temperate rainforests, meaning in our region, and what the values are of those forests. Coming up.